Welcome to MPC, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, where we highlight nonprofit leaders and everyday heroes who are making an impact in our community through their purpose, their passion, and their generosity. I'm your host, Jill Economo, and I invite you to join me for a conversation about how our guest is making a difference and learn how you can make a difference as well. There used to be a show on Netflix back in 2020 that featured a guy named Joe Exotic, who owned an exotic animal park in Oklahoma. The name of the show? Tiger King. And Joseph Maldonado was Joe Exotic's real name. The show received positive reviews initially, until it was revealed that Maldonado was accused of abusing and exploiting wild animals. It quickly received criticism from conservation and animal rights groups and eventually met its demise after only 3 seasons, I think it was. Now, there's a lot to the story, but suffice to say that Maldonado was found guilty of falsifying wildlife records and violating the Endangered Species Act. Now, I never watched the show, but I was aware of the controversy associated with him. And I'm pleased to report that a significant number of animals formerly under Maldonado's care have been moved to various licensed wild animal sanctuaries across the U.S. So all I have to say is thank God for animal sanctuaries. Because I'm an animal lover, I was curious, how many animal sanctuaries do we actually have in Wisconsin? Well, did you know that we have 32 wildlife sanctuaries in Wisconsin, but most of those focus on native wildlife rehabilitation? There's only 2 that specialize in rescuing and long-term care for lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. And one of them is less than an hour from Waukesha. So let's take a peek into who this nonprofit organization is and the impact that they've been making in the lives of many wild animals. Welcome to the show today, Jill Carnegie, founder of the Valley of the Kings Animal Sanctuary, and Shirley Combs, who has been a volunteer since the late 90s. Happy to have you here today, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so very much.
You are welcome. Jill, you undoubtedly know the story of the Tiger King, and you're probably outraged by the abuse and the neglect that you see not only from him, but all across the globe. Tell us how you got started in the rescue business in the first place and why you're so passionate about it.
It started as a very small child, and I was always bringing animals home, much to my mother's demise, and making me take them back, but I would just hide them and keep them and care for them along with my sister. And we lived on a farm, and we had horses and sheep and goats and ducks and all kinds of variety of animals. I have always loved the elderly, and I've always loved the misfits. I married at a very young age, 17, and I lived with my ex's mother-in-law for a while. And again, we had horses and things like that. And I was always reaching out to helping horses that were starved, bringing them home, putting them back together again, and adopting them out. And we moved to Wisconsin. And it's interesting because at first I wanted to breed cougars because, oh, I'm going to put them out in the wild, but there is no wild for them to go to. And I love all animals, all species. I've dedicated my entire life to be in their service. And we had gotten in a cougar and then some tigers. And my brother was working at Long Grove putting in horse stalls. And he said that they had a bunch of exotic animals that they wanted to place. So I'm like, okay, this is good. So we went down and we were able to take a leopard and a couple armadillos and some macaques and things like that. And there were 2 tigers that the man had taken piano wire and hacked off their fangs, which causes all kinds of hairline fractures, Sammy and Farah. And they had to be hand-fed the rest of their life. And they were just beyond special. They were originally Ringling Brothers cats, and then they were sold to this private collector. And we lost Farah to cancer, and Sammy lived to be 36 years old, the oldest living felid in the world, and he's buried there with a beautiful headstone. The night We had to put him to sleep because his hips had given out, and there was a tan and white tubby dove that came out of nowhere, and it sat on that old tiger's grave dirt all day long like it was waiting for a friend. It was Sammy lived in the house with us the last 4 years of his life. He was a tiny tiger, so maybe like 450 pounds.
But that's tiny? Yeah. 450 pounds. Yeah. Wow, wow. But, well, how long were you with the organization, with the Valley of the Kings Sanctuary? How long has it been around? How long have you been there?
I started it 53 years ago.
Wow.
Which seems like yesterday. And seeing all the abuse with all different kinds of animals, and it was just, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
How do you say no to animals that have no place to go?
Right.
And there was a man said, well, I have a three-legged lion. I'm going to put it down. I'm like, I will take it. And then there was a leopard with half of her tail hanging off that they were going to shoot and throw in their compost pile. And I took her, and that was Grandma Venus, and she was one of the loves of my life.
Who does that kind of stuff? I just have to ask that. That's just, I mean, it's a kind of rhetorical question. I get that. You know, that's just crazy when I think about people who harm innocent animals. That just bothers me to no end. I'm sorry. Go ahead and go. I just had to say that. That just frustrates me to no end. But sorry, go ahead.
Well, actually, I think a lot of owners look at them as bicycles. They're not a living, feeling, sentient being. That's the sad part.
That's very
sad. They use them, abuse them, and then got to get rid of them, got to go, don't want them anymore.
Mm-hmm. So you have been at the sanctuary for 50 years. Okay. Wow. Well, give us an example of some of the animals, some of the exotic animals. You mentioned some tigers. What are some of the other exotic animals that you have at the Valley of the Kings?
We have all kinds of them. We have a South American porcupine and cavies and a Thai liger, very rare. The owner had cancer, and we picked her up with some of the other cats in Corpus Christi, Texas. We have grizzly bears, black bear, emu, wolves, foxes, all kinds of different animals.
Okay, well, so I've heard stories of people buying an exotic animal, like some of them that you mentioned, or let's just say that they're not a typical pet. They buy them as a baby, and then they grow out of that safe-to-handle stage. Or maybe there's a surplus of farm or domestic animals that also grow out of that safe-to-handle stage. Tell us what happens to them after that point.
Well, generally, farm animals and goats and things like that, they will just dump them at a sale barn, and they'll end up going to meat or wherever. Exotic animals, a lot of them have been dumped. We've gotten them from animal control, different states. And where do you go with, say you have a tiger, right? And you have it illegally and you want to get rid of it, people just turn them loose. And that happens a lot in Florida. It's a disposable world.
And you have a story about a four-legged friend of yours called Charlie, correct? Do you want to share that story?
Charlie was a black leopard. He was originally from a movie producer in California. They had all of his teeth out so that he could sit next to stars and not hurt anybody. Charlie came through us kind of like in an underground situation. I think they smuggled him out, and he ended up in Texas, and then he came to us via people transporting him. We had Charlie for quite a few years. Again, he had issues with eating. He had to be hand-fed, and it was just so sad to see this beautiful, magnificent cat struggle with his mouth, playing with toys or trying to eat, and that a human would lower him to that. It was devastating.
And they pulled his teeth so that he wouldn't harm the humans.
Correct. Every single one.
So now that animal struggles for the rest of its life.
Yes.
Just so that they can use it for ridiculous reasons.
Yes.
Yeah.
Vanity.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Well, besides exotic animals, you also have some farm animals. So tell us where those come from.
We recently took in animals from a farmer that lost his farm to the bank. And they had to be out on this one day. They called the night before and I said, yes, bring them. One is a big steer named Bob.
Bob the steer.
he weighs about 1,200 pounds, maybe a little bit more. We took in their goats that have horns, and so we had to separate them because our other goats that don't have horns were targets. So we're going to slowly put them into the herd. Yes, it's sad, and then we took in a crippled cat with two kittens. I felt really bad because they were crying and really upset, but they were thrilled that there was a place for them to go because they were going to put them all down.
And don't you have a pet potbelly pig?
Yes. And he grew too big to be in a house. And that's a common mistake with people. I mean, they're so cute when they're little and they're running around and they're happy little pigs. But then what happens when they're 250 to 400 pounds? They're no longer cute or cuddly and they smell like a pig. And 9 times out of 10, they won't use a litter box. So having them in a house is a real issue. And so we've ended up with potbelly pigs through the years, and God knows there are tons of them. There are sanctuaries that's all they do is potbelly pigs.
Really?
And
it was kind of a thing for a while, right?
Oh, you know, rage. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, and you still see tons of them that'll go through sale barns, and innocent people buy them unknowingly, and they need to find out the facts and how big those animals are going to get, what they need to eat, veterinary care. And there's a lot that goes into them, hoof care, everything, vaccinations. And people don't think of that. We've got animals in that are 9, 10 years old, have never seen a vet, never been vaccinated. Mm. It's just sad.
So is that what you would hope that our listeners would take away from that particular situation?
I would say, please don't support that industry. And if you do get an animal, please spay and neuter. So important.
And so you're saying before you acquire a pet, whether it's big or small, exotic, domestic, or farm, ignore that cool factor, right? They're so cute. And like the pigs you talked about, they're so cute. I would love to have this cute little pig. But educate yourself. Educate yourself on the care of that animal, what it needs, feeding, exercise, training, overall care, the whole picture, as I think you were talking about before. And just make sure that you know everything before you make that commitment.
Absolutely. That is so very important. A lot of it is ego because, oh, yes, I have this. And then the novelty wears off. And then the animal turns into a bicycle. It's not being cared for, not getting fed. And then animal control comes in and has to seize it.
Do you have a particular story that you want to share about that in particular?
We have a group of grizzly bears and a black bear that came from Banks, Alabama, from a roadside zoo. And these animals were very thin, horribly abused. The cages were just a nightmare. It was boards with nails sticking out everywhere. There was a 1-inch PVC pipe coming out of the ground, and they could just drink very little from the top of it. And these bears really suffered. So we got a call if we could please take them. We originally agreed to take the two black bears. And when we loaded them, the grizzly bears were hanging on the fence crying for us to take them.
Oh.
So I said, we'll be back to get them.
Yeah.
And I raised $100,000 in 3 weeks. We put up an incredible enclosure for them. It's 4 feet deep of concrete all the way around the edges so they can't dig out, but they could dig in the middle and be a bear. And we've got lockouts for them and beautiful bear dens. And we went back and got them. Mm. And they're so happy. And now they're tubby and they get fed every day, and they have the cutest personalities. They're just wonderful, wonderful bears. Mm. But again, they suffered for many years because they were 11 years old at that time.
Mm. I can see the emotion with you now. And, you know, you can see that passion that comes out, you know, when you have an opportunity to help a helpless animal, you're going to step in and do everything you can. $100,000 in 3 weeks, did you say?
3 weeks.
Wow. Wow. Well, kudos to you. That's wonderful. Well, we've been talking about care for not only exotic animals, as Jill was just saying, but also for domestic animals. So I have a question for you, our listeners. What do you think is the most underserved domestic animal in the United States? Think about that. And stay tuned, and we'll talk more about it after we return.
Milwaukee's philanthropic community is brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. This year, EIG celebrates 30 years of thoughtful growth, personalized service, and community impact. From a kitchen table vision to a boutique wealth management firm, EIG has always put people first, offering transparent advice, fiduciary care, and education that empowers families for generations. To learn more, visit ellenbecker.com.
Welcome back to MPC, Milwaukee's philanthropic community. I'm your host, Jill Economo, and my guests today are Jill Carnegie and Shirley Combs from the Valley of the Kings Animal Sanctuary. So I said before the break that we've been talking about care for not only exotic animals, but also for domestic animals. And the question I posed was, what do you think is the most underserved domestic animal in the United States?
So that would be street kittens and community cats, also known as ferals. Unfortunately, the cats will reproduce every 2 months once they're born. And if they're captured and you say, send them to a rescue, send them to a no-kill. Well, if they're not in a rescue before they're 7 weeks old, which that's before they're weaned, most rescues aren't going to touch them with a 10-foot pole because the time it takes to transition the trust and gain the trust after a cat has been outside and surviving on their own, even for as little time as 7 weeks, it takes time, money, effort to just get them to be comfortable and to trust that they're safe.
So are you saying after, so say that again, I'm curious, because I know a lot of people who have feral cats in their yards, in their neighborhood. Are you saying that to domesticate a feral cat is next to impossible?
Absolutely not. It's possible.
Okay.
If you invest the time.
That's and when they're young.
Even when they're older.
Okay. Okay.
But it takes time and effort and patience.
Okay.
And without that, and without the time and effort and patience, and knowing our society and our shelters are overcrowded as it is with human relinquishments of their pets or whatnot comes in and plays, the breeders overbreeding, whether it's dogs, cats, whatnot, the shelters are overflooded.
Yeah.
So they tend to say it takes too much effort to transform the life of a cat that was born in the community or that was released into the community because somebody decided, oh, my cat's fine, I can't take care of him anymore, or my cat is going to be fine spending days outside and nights inside, and then the cat never comes home for whatever reason and gets lost or whatnot. So when there's cats, the reason why I say that they're underserved is they're misunderstood. They take a lot of time and effort. And that's where like Valley of the Kings, the TNR community can help, but it takes a lot. And it's a lot of love and a lot of patience. And unfortunately, a lot of funding is not available. So there's, you know, a lot of the big pet food companies, there's huge charities. And that's wonderful that the pet foods overproduce their pet food. And then they say, oh, it's near expiry or whatever. It's a damaged slightly box. And then they have a places that they distribute their overstock from. Unfortunately, a lot of the places that they distribute their overstock from have rules and regulations that do not support the feral cat community.
Oh.
So a lot of the funding, you know, I've reached out even, you know, just for whether the sanctuary or just kind of helping other groups with community cats or myself. And you reach out to directly to the pet food company, and the pet food companies go to our charity partner. You go to the charity partner, and the charity partner says, oh, you don't qualify.
Yeah.
But basically, funding for, you know, food and litter and low cost, it's just very difficult because you're trying to find the supplies that they need, but there's not really a good spot to, or a good company, corporate or charity that actually will help to fund and support these cats that didn't choose to be born, didn't choose to be accidentally let out because they snuck out of the house and you didn't spay or neuter them. And now they're making more babies and stuff like that, and being born into a life that they didn't expect.
Well, we talked a little bit about this before when Jill was, she mentioned it briefly in the first segment, but what's the message that you would like every private animal lover and pet owner to do for their pets that is so important and it will help the situation that you were just talking about?
I would say spray and neuter. It doesn't matter if you think that they're too young. As soon as they're of age, of the appropriate size, get them spayed, get them neutered so that an accident doesn't happen. You don't accidentally walk your dog and then your dog winds up having puppies, or your cat sneaks out and your cat now is going to have kittens, or a stray cat's going to have kittens because your male cat went out.
And I know that some people will say, oh, I can't afford to have it done. But there are places, I think Matic is one of the places, that will do a spay or neuter at a very, very reasonable price, or sometimes even free. They want to make sure that the pet owners, the animal lovers, are being responsible. There are plenty of dogs and cats out in the community to be adopted. There's no reason to have these poor animals keep reproducing. So your message then would be spay, neuter in large letters, right?
In large letters, and exactly what you said is there's always ways. We know traditional veterinary is highly expensive, but there are resources within the community that help to lower that cost and make that a possibility and enable those things to happen.
Yeah, I know my mother had a spay cat. Well, it didn't help that she fed them and made a warm bed for them in her shed so that they wouldn't get cold in the wintertime. But when the mama had babies for the second time and she kept one, gave some to family members, and then took the rest to Haws or maybe even Wisconsin Humane Society. But she finally ended up, I don't know if trapping is the right word, but she was able to get the mama cat, took her to a place to have her spayed, and then brought her back home and released her again. So if my mother, who is now 90 years old, can do something like that with minimal resources, I think anybody can do that, right? That's the responsible and the loving thing to do. Well, you do such wonderful work at the sanctuary, and I'm so impressed. I actually chose to donate and become a member after learning more about the many ways that you make a difference for animals. If you could prioritize your top needs right now, so let's say there's animal lovers listening, whether it's exotic or domestic animal lovers, what would your priorities be right now?
I would say the number one priority is volunteers. We have such a variety of residents. I like to call them residents as opposed to animals.
Okay.
We have such a variety of residents, and you know, we have our community cat community, our kittens. We have farm animals. We have small exotics that we classify with the farm animals, like your porcupines and the cavies, which cavies are like a little in the rodent family.
Okay.
But they're like mini kangaroos, so to speak. They're kind of really cute. And then we have exotics. So we have different caretaker responsibilities. Volunteering is at minimum, if you can spend a day a week, if you can spend a couple of hours per week on a consistent basis as a caregiver, carpentry, handy people. Right now we're building feeding stations for the animals. So, you know, we're looking for handy people for that.
And you've been a volunteer for over 25 years.
I've been a volunteer for over 25 years, and I've filled in all those roles. And, you know, I've started off, let me just take the garbage out and sweep up the areas that I did the exotics. So I did the lions and the tiger pens and learned how to do it, how to be safe. And then I've done farm animals. I've done a lot of the social media stuff. So I do a little Jane of all trades. But yeah, I mean, volunteering, there's a lot of roles. There's also transport roles. A lot of times we get donations and we just need some help with pickup trucks of like meeting at a destination in Northern Illinois and taking it up to the sanctuary or somewhere in Wisconsin. So just kind of those kinds of things.
It's important to make sure the audience understands that this is not a zoo.
Exactly.
You can't just come. And I know when I was talking to you, Jill, you wanted to make sure that I understood that it's not a zoo for people to come and pet the animals and, oh, how nice. But you can become a member and you can come and see the animals and learn about them. And then perhaps you eventually become a volunteer, like you said, Shirley. What are some of the other priorities?
Funds, medical supplements, foods, construction materials. We do have a small quarter weekly staff because we can't rely on volunteers 100%. So for salary, we really do have a need for grant writers. We are 100% publicly funded. We do not receive any aid from the state or the government. So definitely funding for that and volunteers and funding.
So volunteers for sure, funds for medical, food, supplements, payroll, all that good stuff, and also grant writers. So
grant writers is another
apply for some funding out there, which is so important.
Exactly. And it's a skill you have to have. So you kind of have to be willing to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to be an expert, but, you know, you can start off, you know, let me try to look this up and look that up. I know I've applied and I've got no training and it's like, oh, let me get some samples and find some companies that are close by and ask. Because it doesn't hurt to ask a question. It hurts when you don't ask.
Right, right. And so another way that listeners can help to support your mission is to become a member. Talked a little bit about that before. Can you elaborate on that piece?
So we encourage you to get involved. Meet the animals in person. That's how you learn about the sanctuary. That's how you really connect, honestly. I've gone everywhere. I actually kind of grew up at a public zoo in Chicago, going there every week and hanging out in the lion area, walking around while my mom was on the phone, because that's where there happened to be a public phone. But it was literally seeing the animals throughout my life and then walking into the Valley of the Kings for the first time. I happened to see them on a TV show. I got a membership for my birthday and I was hooked. I was like, the animals are not pacing. The animals are full. They're happy and you can tell that they're happy and you can tell that they're content. And it was like, yes, this is where I belong. This is where this is what I want to support. And I'm still there. So it kind of,
that says something for sure. And membership is reasonable.
Exactly. Yeah. We're not open to the public because we want to keep the stress off of the residents. This is their retirement home. This is their final destination. They should be happy, well-fed, carefree, stress-resistant. So, yeah, we're open as a membership. Our memberships are very reasonable. We do 6-month memberships, 1-year memberships, family memberships, individual memberships. So there's something for everyone. So if somebody's like I can't remember what it is, but the summer in the Florida or the winter in the Florida in the summer, snowbirds, it's perfect. Get a 6-month membership in springtime. You're good to go. And like I said, the price is less than admission to the movie theater nowadays, depending on, you know, how many people you bring.
Right. And while you're there, you may as well volunteer. I mean, you're out there getting to learn and know the animals. You may as well volunteer, right?
Exactly. The other thing that we have, we do have a partnership with Bigfoot Recreational Center. We've been doing that for the past several years, where you sign up to do a visit, an educational tour visit, and you meet up at Bigfoot. They will bring you out there. We will have a tour guide give you the educational tour and answer any of your questions while you're going on the tour. Learn about the animals, learn about the facility, learn about why it's important. A lot of the stuff what we're talking about is covered in the educational tour so that you have an understanding so you can take it away.
Okay. Well, so if somebody's listening and they want to get to Valley of the Kings to learn more or reach out to you, what's the best way for people to do that?
Visit us on our website, VOTK.org. Our website talks about our mission, our purpose, how you can get involved, becoming a member, volunteer. It shows, list out a lot of our volunteer opportunities and goes more in depth of like what types of things that you might be doing, what type of task you might be doing. or you can visit us on our Facebook page, and there's all sorts of information, ways you can get to membership, volunteer, and our wish list.
You have an Amazon wish list, so if somebody's looking to donate some things, you can pop over there. And if somebody were to just Google Valley of the Kings, it takes you to the website, right? Takes you to where you need to go? Okay, so that's always an easy thing. Or you can visit our show notes, because there'll be some things there that will help you get to where you want to go. So I want to thank you for visiting with us today, Jill Carnegie and Shirley Combs from the Valley of the Kings Animal Sanctuary. I appreciate you for so many reasons, not the least of which is the rescue and the long-term care for many wild animals across the country. So thanks for being here today and sharing the great work that you do.
Thank you so much for having us. It's an honor to be able to speak on such a highly respected podcast.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're extremely grateful.
You're very welcome. Stay tuned next week to hear how another wonderful organization is making a difference and learn how you can make a difference as well. Always remember, whether you're at home, at work, or out in the community, find a way to be a blessing and give a blessing. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. If something in today's conversation resonated with you, share it with a friend or family member. And if you haven't already, subscribe so you never miss an episode. At Ellen Becker Investment Group, we believe education and community impact go hand in hand. That's why we love bringing you thoughtful insights from leaders and organizations who care deeply about making a difference in Milwaukee and beyond.
Please note, this podcast is intended for general informational purposes and to highlight philanthropic efforts in our community. The opinions and missions expressed on MPC do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellen Becker Investment Group employees and leaders. For more resources, visit ellenbecker.com. We'll see you next time.